Accession number 18548, Reel 3.
Alfred Lee, Reel 3.
Right, I finally got the needle into him, but what I realised is I should have put M on his forehead for morphine, which I never knew at the time. But this Sergeant Ross, old platoon sergeant, he got the MM. He did wonderful work in the forest by getting the wounded away. Anyway, eventually afterwards I found out that Peter died. So I said to the major, I said, I'm going to find the rest of the section. They said, right, O'Lee. So I carried on and found the rest of the chaps in this German bunker, a timber bunker. Now, on the side of the wall was this grandmother clock with wires coming out of it, which looked very suspicious. So I said to the chap, I said, well, that looks naughty, doesn't it? He said, yeah. So I think we ought to pull the wires out. So we pulled the wires out. Two wires. We stopped there in the bunker all night through, and the next morning the Black Watch came through with these crocodiles. So they pulled us out the light, and as we went past the crossroad, I think there's something like 2 500-pound bombs with the fins off were buried in the road. I believe that they were ready to detonate from that clock that was in the bunker. Anyway, went back about a mile. We rested there for about 1 or 2 days. Then we went forward again and did another attack. It was farther on. What it was a night attack with Montgomery searchlight, Hartley missile, moonlight. Without support of these new rockets, artillery and I think there's 2 regiments of Middlesex doing all red shoot. Then the Vickers, you know, like something like 57 bloody Vickers firing all that. Now we advanced across this field in section of time. And believe me, I've never sweated so much in all my life with fear. It was pouring off me. A young lad called Vic Day just come back off leave. He was our section leader. As we advanced, he must have been hit by a Middlesex bullet. Of course, the buggers were firing low because you could hear them coming over. But we never missed Big Day because we're open order, you know, well spread out. Eventually, we arrived at our destination, which was a farmhouse. That's Sergeant Ross. I says, Big Day's missing, Sergeant. I says, can I go back for him? And the father's no. So we heard later on that we'd been picked up by a tank and took back to the field dressing. But he also died. So the following day we did attack into south of Gok. Now another midnight manoeuvre. Now imagine mist on the ground by the river, about knee high, open order. Advanced, but somehow, instead of going forward, we did a left wheel. The next thing we found, we were marching at the river, so which we quickly retreated out. So we came to the railway line, it runs down the south of Gok, I think Gok, near the river and the bridge. Now we tried to dig in down the bottom of the railway embankment, but it's full of water, so I went up on the bank and I dug next to the sleepers. It was dry there. And we stopped there. I think one of the 2 lads came up and said, I'll dig in beside you, Ginger. I said, come on then. So these young lads come up and we dug in the side there. So daylight come. No, at the same time Sergeant Ross come up and said, right, I want volunteers to come forward to see if the bridge is blown across the river. But nobody spoke, like, you know, so it was you. So we went forward. The bridge was blown, so that was it. Hasty retreat, come back. Anyway, next day, the 53rd Welsh put a tack in across the river. The shelled and mortar bombs. You can see the bombs, like, you know, good good view it was, you know. And this lone German came out of the trenches after the barrage had finished. He was staggering back towards his own line. So we got the brain gun up and we had a shoot at him. We all missed. The British. Yeah, full magazine, two magazines at him. We gave it up. Well, it must have been about 400 yards away. Anyway, so the 53rd Welsh come in. They took the position. And next minute we saw the stretcher go back. Two lads carrying a stretcher, so it must have been a German. So we're in that position then, about 12 o'clock. Pull us out there, back the railway, and we went into attack again. We're clearing these houses. And this OP officer, Royal Artillery, 25 pounds, I think it might have been out the 126 Regiment or the 127 of Support Regiment. And a bit of a jack of a lad, you know. He's, come on, you baggers, you know, happy gear lad. Sling a bomb down the cellars and all that, a grenade, carry on, and eventually went through and we came to this German communication trench shaped like a W. Anyway, jumped in there. Somehow found myself on the brain gun. So he's beside me, and he looked across the road, there's houses there, and a couple of Jerry's coming in the back garden. So he said to me, he says, a couple of Jerry's there, he says, shoot at them. So I come up with a brain gun, good sight this time, I made certain. I let off the old magazine. I'm just going to change the magazine over, and I heard this distinctly pop of a mortar. You get used to it. And I looked up, and behind this house came this mortar bomb that had a white ring round it. It just looked like a bull's eye. And I ducked, and it landed behind me on the ground behind the trench. And I never went across, well, I went right through a trench like a bloody ground, you know, on hands and knees running. So this artillery officer said, well, I'll move the bugger. So he went away, and about half an hour later he came up with Churchill, and he knocked the juries out of the house, took the prisoners. So we moved to another position, this house, and it was dead quiet there. Gok was there, and usual, I was looking around, like, you know, and went in this house, down the cellar, and quite a large cellar, and it was full of these panzerfists in wooden crates.
Full of what?
Panzerfists. Anti-tank weapon.
Panzerfaust. Yeah.
Panzerfists. And also was that new German assault rifle. You know the Russian K-47? Well, the Germans brought one out before that. And I saw it there by the wall. I couldn't understand why it had been left there. Hey, I picked it up and I'll give that to the Plumes Platoon Sergeant. And went back to his house and down the cellar beyond the, because the general thing was loot, wasn't it? Instrument, watches, anything like that. I found this big leg of bacon, ham. And the lad said, God, Junior, let's see how my face like. So got all the knife, I was cutting about 3/4 inch thick, this beautiful bacon, you know, ready to fry up. And all of a sudden a voice from the top of the stairs come, get your kit ready, Lee, you're going on leave. So went on leave. But before I left the Dutch house, or the house, I took this leather jacket with us. Magnificent leather jacket, lined with velvet, you know, new. Took that back with us. I was going to bring some canaries back, but I, you know, I thought they wouldn't stand up the journey. German canaries. But I'll give that a miss.
What do you want canaries for?
Well, my dad loves canaries. My uncle loves canaries. And I thought it was a gift for them. German warblers. Anyway, I get home and surprise her sister and all that. And I went up north, saw the father, come back. 7 days leave. A bit mournful. So, go back. Went into training for crossing the Rhine. Am I boring you?
No, not at all.
They crossed the Rhine, open boats, and the company, D company, they went forward, and then Reese was on the right of us, Reese. We turned right, went through the back houses and gardens behind Reese, but Flaherty, Corporal Flaherty, when I told him we're going, he mustn't have heard us, so he was left behind. Him and his section. But I was tail end Charlie then going through, and we got through the gardens. And I saw this bicycle. It was a German lady's bicycle. And on the carrier was a radio. And I said to him, I said, radio there, lads, you know. But he was in a hurry. At the same time, three Germans come around the corner. And we've been told us here, and a hawk. I said, and a hawk. You know, and a hawk. And they went for the weapons. So I fired from the hip. I caught the centre one. It must have been, he went down. The other two Jerry's took the heels, and I took my heels. I caught up with the rest of the chaps, and they came to the road. They'd already felled a tree across the road, Jerry's. The big house, there's a big house there. I think it belonged to the manager of the tobacco factory or something. And I slung a grenade over the house. I shouted out, grenade. And I was still waiting for it to go off, but it never went off. So we went round the back of the house, and all of a sudden this German came in an American Jeep. You know, took from the Ardennes. And he stopped, and he got off that jeep so fast, I never seen a bloke move so fast on a knife. Anyway, he didn't get far. So he had a jeep. Anyway.
Where is this place?
It's Reese. The top end of Reese. Right. We dug in the back garden. The lieutenant said to me, right, you bodyguard for him, and the wireless operator, and the batman. Now, the batman had just come out from Fort George. He'd been up in Fort George all the time as waiting on in the sergeant's mess as a waiter. But they were scraping the barrel for blokes now. You know, we're getting short, infantrymen. He's a regular. He had a wife and a child. So he dug in the back garden with us. We dug in there. The Germans were in the house down the road. And I'm a bit of a barney with them. One or two things happened. One of the lads fired a peat at the house. He fired back with a jerry with a spandau. He blew the cheek out of one of the corporal's faces. He had a ghastly wound. Well, things went quiet. Anyway, what happened was that I found these pickled eggs in the cellar. You know, you've seen pickled eggs? So I said, I'll fry up, so I had about three or four eggs in the mess tin, bit of petrol like jerry, probably. And this batman come in. He said, what you got, Ginger? I said, well, doing some eggs. Oh, I said, great, he do me a few, so I fired him four eggs in the mess tin, his mess tin. Anyway, he went out and says, eat them in here, in the cellar, like, you know. He said, no, I'm going back to the slit trench. So he apparently went back to slit trench, and old Jerry must have seen him. He got a bust of spandau through the back of his head, blew off his head away. He still had his tin hat on. And we laid doggo for about an hour or so, and then went out and saw him. But he was not at the bottom of the trench, he was like wedged in his trench. But he still had the mess tin with the four eggs in it. That was in his right hand. He was dead, like, you know. Unfortunately, the eggs were cold by then, like, so. Anyway, that was his lot. But previous night before, as a German come up, two Germans had come up, they walked into us, we took them prisoners. One was a radio operator, and the other one had this German light automatic rifle, mostly plastic. I don't know what a side magazine you load, and a bandolier of ammunition. Anyway, this batman had taken the ring off him. Because the lad was married, the German was married, so I said, I don't take his ring, man. I took his watch, mind you. but I wouldn't take his ring, you know, sacrilegious. So that was it. And then we had a very good Canadian officer called Mackay, Captain Mackay. He came and said to us, he says, get your stuff lined up by the fence of the garden. And coming up the road was about 30, 40 Germans in a single line. And we dug all behind his fence, the Bren gun and the rifles, the Sten guns and all that. It must have been about 8 or 9 of us lined up there. And he sent the Bren gun, he says, when I see a fire, fire. Anyway, Germans come within range. He said, bring a fire. And all he heard from the brink of his putt, jammed it with fire. It was dirty, hadn't been maintained, which didn't go down too well with the major. He left him blind, like, you know. So he said, oh, fire. So we're open fire with our rifles, Sten guns, whatever we had, like, you know. Anyway, we saw the jerrys off, that was it. And then later on in the day, we had tank support. The tanks had come over, Sherman's. Sherman tank knock hell out the house that the Germans held, like, you know, they surrendered. And they come out with this German, they'd used the door for a stretcher, and four of them carried him out, a bullet wound. And that was the jury I'd previously shot about a couple of nights ago, so he's still alive.
In his abdomen?
In his abdomen. I don't know why, but. Anyway, we cleared all the houses down there, and we stood to, and, you know, the following day, 7th Armour had come through. We did a few more attacks, like in the forest, with the typhoon at, you know, the Tiffies. They were right in front, close support. They found one German, he was bomb happy. And we carried on straight through there.
So all this was the first day of the Rhine crossing?
It was 2-3 days after. You know, carrying on. But we rolled in action all the time. We never had a. We came to a place where the 7th Armoured had liberated a town and a German Mark IV come through, SP gun, and he knocked out about 8 or 9 tanks, Cromwell's M10s and all that. So we got a game of football there. He must have seen, so he stomped us a few shells. So we pulled out. We carried on there, we came to a place near Delmarhorst. You heard of Delmarhorst?
Yes. Delmarhorst.
Delmarhorst, yeah. But there was a place called Gannica Sea. It's near Delmarhorst. If you look at your map, you probably find Gannica Sea. But we did attack across the open fields there, and he shot. He was mortaring us. And we run like hell, and we made for these houses of bungalows, you know, a bit of protection. But across the fields was this German flak guns, you know, like quads. You ever seen them? Like four cannons in a quad. And he depressed himself, and we're in the houses, and he just couldn't depress himself near enough to get at us. As he's firing, he was coming through the top end of the room. AP shells were coming through the room. HE was busting against the wall. And we were laying flat like, you know, doggo. But he did manage to knock out one of the Middlesex Bren carriers. Anyway, a shell would come up and knock hell out of him. He was knocked out. And then stopped there. And then the following day, get your kit together. We went up the road, D Company, and we came to these Churchill crocodiles, a squadron of them. Sort yourself out. My section was with the 2nd Churchill, a flamethrower, and we went in Gannica Sea and started proceeding to burn the village down. Now, the village roof was thatched roofs. What were the flamethrowers firing the flames and hitting the roofs, trying to get the thatch going, more or less ricocheted off the roofs at an angle. And walked along with bits of this jelly-like flames coming off us, you know. actually landing on us. One of the lads in front, Paddy, he had what were on top of his tin hat, like a flame, you know. So, funny enough, sense of humour, I started singing happy birthday. So, we advanced, like, you know, and come across this trench, there's two German women there screaming their heads off. So I said, what do these? The officer said, leave them there. So he carried on, and he went through and burnt the village down. Once again, a section, my section, was forward, up by the railway lines. And the corporal, he come from Cumberland. Anyway, we whacked, we were, you know, dead tired. These German girls came to the back door of the house and chatting away there and all that. Gives a cigarette and we smoke them. And the old German come in the house and said to me, come with me. I said, no, what are you after? And so he went to the cupboard and he put his hand in the cupboard. I thought he was going to bring out a gun or something. And instead he brought out this big German sausage, salami sausage, which I told him to keep, I didn't want it. So did I watch, and then the foreign deer were upstairs of the house, you know, looking out that way. And the road was that side. And all of a sudden we heard this commotion of fire and all that. So come very much alert, like, you know. So I looked out this window, and down the passage, I saw this German paratrooper telling the old boy of the house to get down the shelter. So I come up the old 303 and silent, I shot him, it must have been about 30 yards away. He went down. And they were all quiet, like, and there was a lamppost a bit far this way. And this German, his comrade, came up and he's stood aside the lamppost. Now he wouldn't come out, couldn't get a clear shot at him. So he came out one step and he still wasn't clear. But eventually he came out two steps. And I was up there and he's looking over there. And he came upstairs and I shot him and all. So he went down. So the first German, he had a Smizer. You know Smizer? Prize weapon. So I said to Andy, so I'm going down and get the Smizer. So I said, come with me. So we went downstairs, across the passage. And I took the Smizer off the dead German. And as I looked to the left, like, there's another German lying farther up towards the road. So I said, well, I'll knock this bugger off and all around. So I run out of him and I fired a Spandau, not a Spandau, a Smizer. And I only got one round off. The damn thing jammed. That's a bloody fine weapon this year, like, jamming on us. Anyway, the German lying on the floor, he'd been hit by the corporal. The corporal fired a Sten gun. He'd been hit in the right leg. Shattered, it was. Completely open. Broken bone and everything. And he's screaming like hell he was. So somehow the Lord must have been merciful on him. So I changed my mind. I said to Andy, I said, give the hand, Andy. So I grabbed him under the German under right armpit, Andy the left, and we dragged him along the cobble, this cobble passage. And his old leg was bouncing off the passage, and he's screaming blue murder. I told him, shut up, you bastard. We dragged him into the house, and he said to me, comrade, I said, kaput. So we proceeded in doing a bit of first aid work on him. So we used to carry a shell dressing in the helmet, big shell dressing. I put this over his leg, shell dressing, and we got some splinters of wood, you know, I think it was a bit of a packet case. We made splinters for his leg to hold it straight, and then we tied his leg to his right leg to his left leg. And he said to me, have your cigarette, Joan? I'd one cigarette left. And I give this Joe my last cigarette, but I also took his wristwatch in exchange. So one of the lads went down, got a stretcher bearers, took them away, and then I remember this German girl come to the door and saying to me, like, two Germans want to surrender, like, you know. So I went with her, And this John come behind her. I went to the house, and he come behind the door, surrounded arms up. And his mate had been wounded in the leg, so I said, well, I'll leave you here, because you can't do any harm. And I took the gentleman down the road to company HQ, and Nick, the Bren gun carrier, put his hand in the German's pocket and brought out this beautiful pocket watch, which annoyed me, because that should have been mine. So I took him back, and what happened was, afterwards, was these two M10s. You know what M10 is?
A tank?
Two American tank destroyers, M10s, that the Germans had took in the Ardennes. They came into the village, and everybody was dog-awe. Never moved anything. I was looking out the window, saw the tanks, you know, Christ. P-1's fire, were at it. But funny enough, a German civilian walked right in front of the tanks with a white flag. He went away, so the tanks went out of it. So I was back upstairs again, and looking out the window, and I said to Corporal, I says, there's Germans over there in the field. So he said, I'll go and get the artillery OP up. So they got the artillery officer up, and he looked and he said, no, it's not worth firing at. So he went away. Also, the German that I'd done up, he'd left a Luger behind, so he had the Luger. Then our captain come up, a bloke called Leslie, Captain Leslie. He was pioneer captain. He'd been put in charge of company while Mackay had gone on leave. So he looked up there and he saw this German civilian walking down the street. What's he doing, you know? But meantime, before that, he said to me, who killed the two Germans? So nobody spoke like, till Paddy said, Lee. I said, thank you very much. So this German civilian walked the road, so he said, one of the lads, give us your rifle. He fired a rifle, he got one round off, jammed it, you know, that'd been cleaned. So he picked up another one. Now you got three rounds off that, by this jury, couldn't hit him, mind you. So he said, hey, give us your rifle, Lee. So, being a crafty swine that I am, I'd already cleaned my rifle, oiled it, and put 10 rounds in it. He picked my rifle, he got 10 rounds off. He came back, and he didn't say anything. So I said to Paddy, that's bloody great, isn't it? He says, you only give our position away, like, you know. Anyway, he'd gone. So afterwards, he'd gone, we pulled us out the line, you know, Black Watch took over. But proves that my mate Rankin and Crawford, the house behind us, had been standing there, and two juries had been standing talking to them. So he let them go.
Two German soldiers?
Yeah, soldiers. I said, bloody hell. But this German civilian come down, a young lad, caught bicycle, and he's talking away to us and chatting. He's just about to go. I said, right, old mate, you're in the back. It's a German squad. He dressed as civilians like, so he went in the back. As we went back to the house, previous house, where we got stomped by this flak gun, old Leslie had a rifle inspection, cleaned the rifles, and he went through and all that. He went past me, didn't say anything. I said, you can expect mine, sir. He looked at me and said, saucy bugger. Anyway, he went past, so it was Rankin and me and Crawford. Crawford's 8th Army, our guys, got captured in Tobruk, escaped in Rome. And funny enough, they took back the land with us. So we had a scrounger on a farm looking for eggs again. I found this farm and eggs. And I put, I don't know, 3 or 4 eggs in my battle dress blouse. We walked around, right? And we met these Russian displaced persons. They weren't then, they were Russian workers.